on the farthest eastern boundary of the European continent, the former Republic of Zubrovka, once the seat of an empire. On an overcast day, a teenage girl with short brown hair walks alongside a brick wall with the large painted words, Old Lutz Cemetery. She pauses, then proceeds through an open gate. Crossing the cemetery's snow-dusted grounds with a book in hand, the girl passes three darkly clad men sitting on a bench. She arrives at a bronze bust of a mustached man wearing glasses, its concrete plinth covered with dozens of hotel keys hanging from metal hooks. The girl removes a key ring from the pocket of her tan pea coat, then hangs it on the plinth just above a bronze plaque. Shaped as a book, the plaque reads, In Memory of Our National Treasure. Another above it bears the word, Author. The girl admires the older man's bust, then looks to the pink book in her hands. Its front cover reads, The Grand Budapest Hotel. She looks at its back cover, which bears a photo of the author seated at a desk. Now seated at the same desk, the author faces us. A date appears, 1985.
It is an extremely common mistake. People think the writer's imagination is always at work, that he's constantly inventing an endless supply of incidents and episodes, that he simply dreams up his stories out of thin air. In point of fact, the opposite is true. Once the public knows you're a writer, they bring the characters and events to you. And as long as you maintain your ability to look and to carefully listen, these stories will continue to...
Stop it! Stop it! Don't do it!
A boy shoots a pellet gun at him and flees. The author returns to his note cards.
We'll continue to seek you out over your lifetime. To him who has often told the tales of others, many tales will be told. Sorry. The incidents that follow were described to me exactly as I present them here, and in a wholly unexpected way.
Now animated in a mountainous region, two figures wait at the end of a bridge connecting an elevator tower to a narrow peak topped with a reindeer.
A number of years ago, while suffering from a mild case of Scribe's fever, a form of neurasthenia common among the intelligentsia of that time, I decided to spend the month of August in the spa town of Nebelsbad below the Alpine Sudetenwalds and had taken up rooms in the Grand Budapest, a picturesque, elaborate, and once widely celebrated establishment. I expect some of you will know it.
The actual hotel appears, 1968.
It was off-season and by that time decidedly out of fashion, and it had already begun its descent into shabbiness and eventual demolition.
We glimpse various tenants throughout the hotel.
What few guests we were had quickly come to recognize one another by sight as the only living souls residing in the vast establishment. Although I do not believe any acquaintance among our number had proceeded beyond the polite nods we exchanged as we passed in the Palm Court and the Arabian Baths and on board the Colonnade Funicular.
A rail car ascends the mountain.
We were a very reserved group, it seemed, and without exception, solitary.
Guests sit alone in a dining hall. Walking upstairs, the young writer smokes a pipe.
Perhaps as a result of this general silence, I had established a casual and bantering familiarity with the hotel's concierge, a West Continental known only as Monsieur Jean, who struck one as being at once both lazy and really quite accommodating. I expect he was not well paid.
Jean saves half a cigarette.
In any case, one evening, as I stood conferring elbow to elbow with Monsieur Jean, as had become my habit, I noticed a new presence in our company. A small, elderly man, smartly dressed, with an exceptionally lively, intelligent face, and an immediately perceptible air of sadness. He was, like the rest of us, alone, but also, I must say, he was the first that struck one as being deeply and truly lonely, a symptom of my own medical condition as well.
Who's this interesting old fellow?
I inquired of Monsieur Jean. To my surprise, he was distinctly taken aback.
Don't you know?
He asked.
Don't you recognize him?
He did look familiar.
That's Mr. Mustafa himself. He arrived early this morning.
This name will no doubt be familiar to the more seasoned persons among you.
Eyeing them, the bearded man lifts his dark glasses.
Mr. Zero Mustafa was, at one time, the richest man in Zubrovka.
A headline, immigrant claims fortune.
And was still, indeed, the owner of the Grand Budapest.
Headlines show Mustafa's success.
He often comes and stays a week or more. 3 times a year at least, but never in the season.
Monsieur Jean signaled to me and I leaned closer.
I'll tell you a secret. He takes only a single bed sleeping room without a bath in the rear corner of the top floor. And it's smaller than the service elevator.
It was well known. Zero Mustafa had purchased and famously inhabited some of the most lavish castles and palazzos on the continent. Yet here, in his own nearly empty hotel, he occupied a servant's quarters?
A guest chokes.
At that moment, the curtain rose on a parenthetical domestic drama.
Jean hurries over to him.
Which required the immediate and complete attention of Monsieur Jean.
A man with a dog helps Jean tend to the choking guest.
But, frankly, did not hold mine for long.
The young writer steps into a darkened elevator and turns on a light. At night, he sits up in bed, staring off.
However, this premature intermission in the story of the curious old man had left me, as the expression goes, gespannt auf ein Flitzerbogen, that is, on the edge of my seat, where I remained throughout the next morning, until, in what I have found to be its mysterious and utterly reliable fashion, fate, once again, intervened on my behalf.
In the hotel spa, the writer sits in a personal tub wearing a swim cap.
I admire your work.
Leaning forward, he glances around the room.
I beg your pardon?
Mustafa sits a few tubs down.
I said, I know and admire your wonderful work.
Thank you most kindly, sir.
Did Monsieur Jean have a word or two to share with you about the aged proprietor of this establishment?
I must confess, I did myself inquire about you.
He's perfectly capable, of course, Monsieur Jean. But we can't claim he's a first, or in earnest, even second-rate concierge. But there it is. Times have changed.
The writer admires the aging bathhouse.
The thermal baths are very beautiful.
They were in their first condition. It couldn't be maintained, of course, too decadent for current tastes. But I love it all just the same, this enchanting old ruin.
How did you come to buy it, if I may ask? The Grand Budapest.
Also wearing a swim cap, Mustafa leans out of view. The writer peers across the room as the older man re-emerges.
I didn't.
In a shower stall, a matron hoses down a large naked man. The writer shares a smile with Mustafa.
If you're not merely being polite, and you must tell me if that's the case, but if it genuinely does interest you, may I invite you to dine with me tonight? And it will be my pleasure, and indeed my privilege, to tell you my story, such as it is.
Now in the grand dining hall, Mustafa and the writer sit at an isolated, spotlit table to a waiter.
Two ducks roasted with olives. Rabbit, salad. Pigeauvet 52, plus a split of the brute.
The waiter hurries off.
That should provide us ample time. If I commence promptly.
By all means.
The waiter pours a splash of brute into a tiny champagne glass, and Mustafa tastes it. He nods, and the waiter pours them each a glass. The writer toasts with a distinguished older man. Mustafa enjoys a sip, then leans back in his chair.
Well, it begins, as it must, with our mutual friend's predecessor, the beloved original concierge of the Grand Budapest.
The spotlight fades.
It begins, of course, with...
A red title card, Part 1, Monsieur Gustave. Wearing a long-tailed, deep purple tuxedo jacket, a well-postured man gazes at a wintry landscape from a balcony, 1932. The handsome, mustached man steps inside. He strides across the hotel suite, then opens the door for a line of employees in matching purple uniforms.
Bring the table to the window.
Yes, Monsieur Gustave.
Bring the tray to the table.
By the way, Monsieur Gustave.
Right there. Have those been brushed and blocked?
Of course, Monsieur Gustave.
Pack them in the hat boxes. Is that from Oberstdorf and Company?
I believe so, Monsieur.
Second trunk. Who has the tickets?
I do, Monsieur Gustave.
Give them to me.
A young lobby boy hands him tickets.
These are in order. Wait in the corner.
The lobby boy hurries off. Now Gustav sits opposite a pale, elderly woman with blood-red lipstick. The Countess stares aside, then meets his gaze.
I'm not leaving.
I beg your pardon?
I'm not leaving.
Why not?
I'm frightened.
Of what?
I fear this may be the last time we ever see each other.
Why on earth would that be the case?
Well, I can't put it into words, but I feel it.
Well, for goodness sake, there's no reason for you to leave us if you'd rather...
Come with me.
To fucking Lutz?
Please.
Give me your hand.
She places her hand in his.
You've nothing to fear. You're always anxious before you travel. I admit you appear to be suffering a more acute attack on this occasion, but truly and honestly, oh dear God, what have you done to your fingernails?
I beg your pardon?
This diabolical varnish, the colour is completely wrong.
Oh really, don't you like it?
It's not that I don't like it. I am physically repulsed.